Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, June 17th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Ray McGovern is going to be joining us later on in the program. There have been a number of terms and phrases that have been launched into the blabosphere, and they require a little bit of clarification. As always, many of the governmental agencies think, and particularly right-wing think tanks, have generated a whole lexicon of euphemisms which have been used to cloud what we're really talking about, what they're actually referring to. Many of the terms have been used let's take this as an example, pulling it straight out of the atmosphere. Climate change, catastrophic climate collapse, which we see evidence of all around us all the time. The euphemisms, the greenwashing that has been created to disguise what the situation really is and what some of the very, very bad solutions really are, and what they mean long term. These are words that we hear and we don't bother to deconstruct. Ray McGovern, though a veteran of former CIA, does indeed know whereof these people are speaking. And he'll be with us in just a minute. We're going to race through a few of the top headlines because, as the world knows, the Middle East is imploding even as we speak. And here again, yet another area in which the American public has fallen prey to some terminology which has been designed explicitly to confuse and to blow smoke around a geopolitics of failure. Here in Oregon, speaking of geopolitics of failure, our governor, John Kitzhaber, who always has billed himself as the architect of health care for all, is still fuming, of course, over his lost bridge, and now we have the Oracle debacle. So it was, and so it had to be. Oregon issued legal demands now for documents that could become evidence in a possible lawsuit against the software developer, which had been, of course, blamed for the state's failed health insurance website. All of this, because private health insurance companies have jumped on a bandwagon which basically didn't exist. There's nothing there. It's the emperor's new clothes. We don't really have health care. We are paying colossal bills to finance an industry based on virtually nothing. We are going to now turn to, we've got a few more headlines to go, but what we really want to do is speak with Ray McGovern. In Canada, there's some interesting developments. The RCMP is now they're militarizing the tar sands fields. They're protecting it because there's so much outrage in that region over what has been done to their landscape that the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, that is, has been called in to oversee the area that is it's right now being protected in some cases by protests and lawsuits, but the Canadian government believes that it's only going to get worse, and they're probably right, and I mean worse in the best way possible, and that Canadians have had it and they want no more of this. The mayor of London has said that Tony Blair's finally gone mad if he thinks he's going to go into Iraq hand-in-hand with the U.S. And if you've been following the Boston bombing trials, and why wouldn't you, tomorrow is the fifth status conference for Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. The day is also the deadline for the defense's potential filing of a change of venue. Good idea. The subject has been raised by the defense only 2 days ago, and they are asked for another 6 weeks. This is a case that no one is looking at, totally under the radar. A great deal more going on there than meets the eye. And again, this is aided and abetted by the co-option and corruption of language. Ray, good morning. Thank you so very much for being with us today.
Well, how are you?
We're well, thanks, and we're glad to have you back on the KBOO airwaves, where this being radio, it's all about words and how words are used. And we look closely all the time at mainstream media, and we look at the proclamations issued by these various agencies, in particular the right-leaning think tanks have apparently been generating this terminology at a brisk pace, which as things get worse and worse, they need more and more words to cover up. So can you talk a bit about some of these things that you've pointed out, this term parallel, the Justice Department's use of a term parallel construction, how do they use it, and what are they really talking about here?
Sure. Well, first you talk about your the use of euphemisms. Well, we don't talk about overthrowing governments anymore. We talk about regime change, right?
Yeah.
So when we have illegal procedures, go to the football field and talk about illegal procedures, well, you usually get about 5 yards penalty for that. These kinds of illegal procedures performed by the FBI, mind you, and the NSA, and the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and guess what? The IRS, and we all know what IRS stands for. These are disguised under the euphemism parallel construction. That sounds pretty harmless, doesn't it? Well, what it really involves is illegal procedures which gather information primarily from NSA bulk collection in direct violation of the Fourth Amendment. Now, usually when I'm on the radio or the TV, I like to ask the interviewer and not give him or her a chance to reply. I say, the Fourth Amendment is only one sentence. May I recite it? I'll give you a chance to reply because I know, Chris, your time is limited. It is one sentence. May I recite it?
Please do.
Okay. The right of the people to be secure. Okay, we're talking about security here. The right of the people to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures of their houses, their papers, their effects shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue except upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be seized, to be searched, or the things or people to be seized, period, end quote. Probable cause. In other words, if you don't have a probable cause to believe that you or your neighbor or somebody else is doing illegal activities, you have no right under the Constitution of the United States, and specifically the Fourth Amendment, to do unreasonable searches and seizures. So what NSA has been doing is collecting information on all of us. And I don't think even NSA contends that we're all probably terrorists or probably criminals. So they don't disguise the fact that they're doing this. Now, when they want to use it, and the way it's used in criminal procedures here in this country is to disguise how they got it. Why do they have to disguise it? Because it's unconstitutional, because it's illegal, and because they can't use it in court. Okay?
Yeah.
So they get this information on us, and you don't have to be a drug dealer. I mean, drug dealers, that's simple. You find out where they're going to be at a certain point of time, and you call the local police, and you say, we have this anonymous source that says Joe Blow is going to be here and he's got lots of heroin in his trunk or something like that. That's easy. And when you get the same anonymous source being so right 98% of the time, then you don't even question what this anonymous source is. You don't even ask whether it's legal or illegal. You get feathers in your cap for making these arrests. And how else is it used? Well, it's used for blackmail. It's used to construct cases of people that the government which wishes to persecute as well as prosecute. Thomas Drake is a good example of that. You know what they did? They took some documents that he had in his house. They were unclassified. And guess what? They made them classified. And then accused him of having classified information in his house. That's how bad it gets. So you can imagine what fertile imaginations can be applied to this illegal procedure of collecting this data illegally. One thing, of course, that happened back in the 70s was J. Edgar Hoover was collecting all manner of data from wiretaps and so forth on everyone. And when the Frank Church Committee took hold and started to investigate all these domestic abuses, they found out that the FBI was collecting wiretap information on guess who? Frank Church.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's how bad it is. And when you see our congressmen and senators, and you've got a good one out there, Ron Wyden, he's not going to falter, but all of his other friends are. When you see them faltering, when you see that they're really, really angry 2 months ago, they're going to fix this NSA thing, and the bill that's prepared all of a sudden becomes watered down to be worse than nothing, you really have to figure out why that happened. And the reason it happened, in my view, is simple. Blackmail. Each one of those congresspeople, each one of those senators has the book on them. Not J. Edgar Hoover anymore. This is J. Edgar Hoover on steroids. This is an electronic treasure of retrievable information that only those as pure as Caesar's wife can feel, you know, just really relaxed about it. So this is incredibly mischievous. And maybe I'll just mention that when Ed Snowden, bless his heart, when he revealed how grossly our rights to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures under the Fourth Amendment, how grossly they had been violated, Diane Ellsberg, my good friend and one of my heroes, talked about the United Stasi of America.
Yeah.
And Stasi, of course, is the word for the old East German secret police. And for those of your listeners who haven't seen Das Leben der Anderen, the lives of others, they really ought to go see it, because it is an incredible portrayal of what's possible when you have this kind of dragnet surveillance. In any case, I'd just like to finish by citing what Wolfgang Schmidt, now, that's his real name, believe it or not, a Stasi alumnus, okay? Now, he's interviewed right after Snowden is revealing all this information. And he's in wonderment. He's saying, so much information on so many people. This would be paradise if the Stasi had this.
Yes.
And then the interviewer says, well, don't you see any dangers here? He says, oh, of course they're dangerous. And then this is the operative paragraph. He says, it is incredibly naive to think that this information will not be used against you, whether you are innocent or guilty. This is why the government collects this information. The only way to prevent it from happening is to prevent the information from being collected in the first place. Period, end quote. And that's it. We've got to go back to the Fourth Amendment. And we've got to eliminate all these parallel constructions and other euphemisms that disguise these gross violations of our rights. We've got to stand up and say, we're not going to be intimidated when people shout, 9-11, 9-11, terrorism, terrorism, fear, fear, 9-11, terrorism. We're not going to be intimidated because we're Americans. And we were given those rights by our founders. Our founders risked a lot to secure those rights for us, and we're willing to risk a little bit ourselves. We're not going to stand for it.
We do, Sir Pierre. What you're saying is a really terrifying vision of a future where we are virtually in, and I use the term virtually in its primary definition. It is a virtual electronic concentration camp, because if we have a population that knows that information is being collected about them, which though may not be used against them right now, today, this week, it's sitting there waiting for an opportune moment, so that if anyone dares raise their head, raise their voice against this this apparatus, that they can be instantly crushed. Because anything can be redefined as illegal. Maybe growing your own parsley, that could in the future be declared illegal, and the parsley growers of America could be rounded up and sent away. So although we don't have to be sent anywhere, we are steaming, we are happily along in this same direction. It's very easy to see how we can when we go barreling into foreign countries, as we did with Iraq, and the mess we've made in the Middle East, that all of the homeland business has played directly into the terrible catastrophes unfolding in Africa and the Middle East, in which the United States seems to be utterly culpable. Could you wrap up here about how we get out of this linguistic nightmare?
Well, I think, Chris, the first thing we need to do is to make sure that our co-citizens realize that when they say we have nothing to fear, we're law-abiding folks and